My guest at this time is Lee Edwards. He is the Distinguished Fellow in Conservative Thought at the Heritage Foundation. He was also a driving force behind the creation of the Victims of Communism Memorial here in Washington. He is also chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. He joins me now to discuss the legacy of communism as May Day parades and marches take place in the United States and around the world celebrating communism and socialism. And Lee, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure to be with you. And not only is today May Day, as you've indicated, sort of the International Workers' Day, but also this year we mark the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. That will be in the fall, and the Victims of Communism Foundation is planning several different events to show and to prove and to demonstrate that communism has not only not worked, it has failed in every single place where it's been tried in some 40 nations around the world.
Let's talk about the legacy in a number of different ways here as we begin. First of all, the legacy in dead bodies, whether it's Joseph Stalin, whether it's Chairman Mao, whether it's Pol Pot, and I know a host of other places around the globe. What's the human toll of communism, and why does communism naturally lead to that type of activity by a government?
Well, you know, Greg, it's just so shocking and so tragic because there is a utopian appeal of communism. People say, "Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? Let's do away with all classes. Let's do away with all conflicts and have some kind of utopia in which we're all going to be friends." Well, that, of course, just works against human nature. And even Marx said, well, the only way we're going to get to communism is through a dictatorship of the proletariat. And as a result of that, and this has been documented not only in the Black Book of Communism, but in studies which have come to light in both China and Russia, over 100 million victims of communism as a result of communism. 100 million.
That is amazing. And Mao and Stalin, I assume, are the worst of the worst?
The sort of the mass butcher, the mass murderer of the 20th century was Mao Zedong in China through things like the Great Leap Forward, so-called, the Great Cultural Revolution, letting 100 flowers bloom and then chopping off their heads. And then second, and a fairly close second, is Joseph Stalin. But what we need to remember about Stalin is it wasn't just that he was acting on his own. Everything that he was doing, it had been started and had been planted and had been theorized by Lenin before him. So Lenin is the real founding father of Bolshevism and communism and this failed ideology in Russia.
Why do they kill people?
Because they say that we're going to arrive at this utopian society, and if you get in our way, and if you deny us, then we're going to kill you. For example, Stalin decided to communize all of the agriculture, all of the lands in the early 30s in Ukraine. Ukrainians objected, and actually they've been planting there for centuries. He said, no, you must go along with this communization. We're going to take your land. As a result of that, there was a famine in Ukraine over one winter, which took somewhere between 5 and 7 million deaths.
What about the legacy in poverty and misery? The promise, of course, is that everyone will be equal, not that everyone will be equally miserable, yet that seems to be the way it turns out. And we're clearly seeing that play out in Venezuela at the present time and in other places around the world. So how does the promise continually fail on that front?
Well, you know, it's because the communists are the biggest liars in human history. If you think about it, here they promised peace, land, and bread to the people way back at the beginning in Russia and then in China. And instead of peace, they got them involved in wars. Instead of land, they took away their land. And instead of bread, they gave them bread lines. And in the last years of communism in the Soviet Union, there were bread lines, because I was in Moscow in 1988, just 3 years before it collapsed. And there were bread lines. There were everything but vodka lines. There's plenty of vodka, Greg. That was the drug of choice to keep everybody sort of somnolent and not any kind of a protesting mode. But everything else was rationed. Everything else was only available to what we call the nomenklatura, the people who were running, the members of the party, the members of the army who were running things in Soviet Russia, and also is still in communist China.
We're talking with Lee Edwards of the Heritage Foundation. And Mr. Edwards, you referenced the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, of course, the Berlin Wall coming down in 89 and the Iron Curtain following. As you look at the world now, as we celebrated back then, what we thought was the end of the Cold War, where do you see the world trending now? Do you see Russia perhaps trickling back in that direction? Do you see, in general, governments around the world more embracing it or resisting it?
Well, I think we have to begin with the fact there are still five communist regimes. Let's begin with that fact. There's China, there is Vietnam, there is North Korea, there's Cuba, and there's little Laos. We always forget about Laos, and they've had a communist regime for 40 years since the fall of Vietnam. So there we are beginning with that. Beyond that, we have to realize that although there are places which are not necessarily run by a communist party, as in Venezuela, which you've mentioned, at the same time, there is an authoritarian regime there. There's an authoritarian government. There is someone as close to being a dictator as you possibly can. And again, it's always this idea of making promises which they know they can't deliver on, making promises which go against human nature, making promises which are just impossible of achievement, and yet people being taken in by them. So this is one of the reasons here at home, Greg, we have to be very, very careful, because there are Marxist professors who are still saying, oh, well, communism is this marvelous idea, just has never been tried adequately, and therefore we can't dismiss it.
Well, let's talk about where we stand right here in the United States, because obviously in the 2016 presidential campaign, while Hillary Clinton won the Democratic nomination, she was very seriously challenged by Senator Bernie Sanders, an avowed Democratic socialist, as he describes himself. How do his ideas stack up to some of the ideas that fueled these regimes we've been talking about? And what does it say to you that his message clearly resonated with some people?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he celebrate his marriage and his honeymoon in Moscow?
Correct.
I'm talking about Bernie Sanders. So the line between Bernie Sanders' democratic socialism and socialism outright is probably pretty thin. And I think I'm frankly concerned that too many young people are not adequately educated or informed about the real failures, about the deaths, about the murders, about the purges. They never heard of the Gulag, for example, that series of forced labor camps in which Alexander Solzhenitsyn and millions of people lived and died. Many of them died. So this is really an educational process which we have to get into, and which the Victims of Communism Foundation is working on. There was a poll which came out, I think, just in the last week, which said that, I guess it was among millennials, that that was 35%, identified themselves as far left, and only 22% identified themselves as conservative. That's disturbing to me. That to me, is a real challenge to all of us, to begin to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing truth, about the manifest failures of communism from the very beginning.
How do you go about that, Lee? Because this issue came pretty close to home for you. I'm sure you saw the photo that came out a number of weeks ago, actually fairly recently, of young people flipping the bird to the very memorial that you helped to spearhead. So
yes, indeed.
What was your reaction to that? And how do you break through when you just talked about how the campus atmosphere is much more embracing of Marxism than arguing against it?
Well, of course, I was shocked, and I was also so saddened to think that these ignorant young men and women could do something like that. If they knew what communism had done, I don't think they would have flipped out against our memorial. But I think it had to begin with education. That's one of the things we've done, is that we have created a curriculum on communism from Marx to Mao, which I'm happy to say is being used in high schools, public schools, private schools, home schools, and so forth. We've got to begin very early on. We can't wait till colleges and universities to begin to tell the truth about communism. So I think it's a question of educating students and, frankly, also educating teachers. And we've also begun a program in which we are bringing high school teachers to Washington, putting them through a 3 or 4 day seminar of what communism is all about, looking at places like Cambodia and what happened there, looking at North Korea, looking at the old Russia, looking at present day communist China. all of this has to be done, I think, and we have to multiply our efforts and make whatever change we possibly can. And the kinds of histories which young people and young Americans are being taught.
Lastly, sir, you've written so many books chronicling the history of conservatism in this country, and of course, one of the critical figures there is President Reagan. His quote that a lot of people are familiar with, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same, or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was like in the United States where men were free. Sounds like that quote has some pretty strong staying power.
Well, it resonates over and over and over again. That's one of the reasons why we have to keep drawing our lessons from Ronald Reagan. And I always laugh, you know, Greg, when the Democrats and even some Republicans, I'm sorry to say, saying, well, let's not keep looking at the past and talking about Reagan. Let's move ahead. No, there are certain fundamental ideas, certain fundamental beliefs and principles which Ronald Reagan laid down so beautifully articulated, as you just said there. And that's somebody whom we're never going to forget and never should forget and draw inspiration from in the years to come.
Final question, sir. In the long run, how do you see it playing out? Does freedom win or communism win?
Oh, absolutely, because I believe there's an instinct within all of us, within our breast, the desire for freedom. And we can see that if people challenging even today China, challenging the authoritarian ways of Russia. So I believe that that is there, but it must be encouraged. It must be educated. It must be developed. It is not going to develop all by itself, as Ronald Reagan just told us just a few seconds ago.
Mr. Edwards, always a pleasure to speak with you, sir. Thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure, Greg. All the best.
Lee Edwards, Distinguished Fellow in Conservative Thought at the Heritage Foundation, driving force behind the creation of the Victims of Communism Memorial, and Chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.